2 o'clock, so we're going to make a start now. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you very much for joining us for our IRIS webinar. Our presenters this afternoon are going to be Balvin Ote from JISC, Ross McIntyre from MIMAS at the University of Manchester, and Joe Alcock from Evidence Base at Birmingham City University. We're very sorry, but Paul Needham is unwell and unable to be with us this afternoon. So Ross has very kindly taken over that section of the presentation. And what we'll be doing in the webinar is providing an introduction to IRIS UK, particularly for those of you who don't know a lot about it. We'll be describing some of the work we've done over the last few months, and we'll be discussing potential future developments. There'll be an opportunity to ask questions after each speaker, and there'll also be a general question and answer session at the end. Please could you type your questions in the chat box as we go along and proceed them with the letter Q. The webinar is being recorded and will be made available on the IRIS UK website. Now, our first speaker is Balvia, so I'll hand over to her.
Hi, can people hear me? I hope so. I will introduce myself. My name is Balvia Note. I'm the Senior Project Manager for the Repository Shared Services work we're doing at JISC. And so I'll explain a little bit that later, because IRIS is in the context of a number of shared services. So what I'm going to do is give you a little bit of background. I'm not going to spend long giving you the background, but I thought it's worth knowing why we're, you know, where we've come from and why we're doing work in this area. So just began work in the repository user statistics area in 2009, and this was with a project called PIRUS, and the P it stands for Publisher and Institutional Repository User Statistics. And this was very much about requirements gathering and feasibility testing, and we were looking at what is needed now as a robust and reliable infrastructure, so at a later date we could compare statistics with publisher statistics, so comparing like for like. So that covered things like standards and infrastructure and content types. So there was a number of things that we were having to, as I said, it was about the feasibility of, you know, what we were building. Was this thing going to be, how could we make it robust? So now we are building and in the process of delivering a national shared service for use statistics, and Ross will explain later how many repositories there are. I think there are about 53 repositories, but that number we should imagine will be growing. And so when we started growing the repository infrastructure, this is in not 2002, 2002 we were doing feasibility testing again, not feasibility, we're testing standards in this area, but in, I think, 2004-05, we were growing a repository infrastructure. Institutions were building repositories. And now we have approximately 200 repositories. And we, in terms of JISC, we needed to look at, okay, well, now we have this infrastructure, how do we measure the usage of repositories and the content? And again, it was demonstrating our impact and our value. Making sure that we, in terms of the investments made, how do we justify that? And the work, this work wasn't in isolation, so we've done work in the library usage statistics area as well. So we have a service called the Journal Use Statistics Portal, some of you may have heard of, and we currently have a project called the Library Analytics and Metrics Project. So this is the LAMP project, but this is beyond just journal use statistics. It's about kind of the, you know, the holistic view of library usage and the types of service that you could build on those usage statistics. So, and again, there was parallel work with OpenAIR. So OpenAIR were and are measuring things and measuring usage, and I'll say a little bit more about that later as well, because IRIS could provide OpenAIR with those usage figures. So, just moving on to the next slide. So as I said, there's a real importance of capturing user statistics, and user statistics are seen as an important factor in capturing impact. Usage is part of a growing metrics infrastructure, which includes citation and altmetrics. And the figures support these metrics start to support management reporting and wider business intelligence gathering, and a national aggregation of user statistics allows for functions such as benchmarking, which you can't do individually, and allows us to measure growing usage. And hopefully later on Ross will show the impressive figures that we have so far. Well, I think they're very impressive. And IRIS certainly gives JISC and other infrastructure providers, as I mentioned earlier, a nationwide picture of the overall usage of UK repositories. And again, very much about justifying the investment made, and to say to, certainly to the naysayers of open access, I won't say who they are, but yet people are using repositories. So the IRIS could also, as I mentioned earlier, could also act as an intermediary between UK repositories and other agencies, such as EU-funded Open Air project, and supplying Open Air with the FP7 usage of papers in UK repositories. So there's a number of things it could do. It could supply other countries with their usage, so it becomes you could franchise out this model for other countries, and that's very much a possibility. So in terms of sustainability, so I mentioned earlier on that IRIS is part of a number of coordinated repository shared services. Now, I won't go into all of those shared services, but some of you will definitely have heard of them. They're the Sherpa services at Nottingham, so Sherpa Romeo, Sherpa Fact, Sherpa Juliet, and there is the Open Door service, and we're improving that, and also the Repository Junction Broker, and IRIS is part of that suite of repository shared services. So we're addressing the sustainability, financial, technical, operational, and organisational aspects of all of these services, and we have 2 years funding, by the end of those 2 years, we want these services to be they are already available, but we want them to be sustained at the end of those 2 years. Also, we're working to improve the quality and consistency of metadata and vocabularies in repositories. So some of you will have heard of the REOX metadata application profile, and vocabulary for access, where we're agreeing a number of things around repositories. And I say that because once you have robust metadata and repositories, you can start building things on top, and certainly it improves services such as IRIS. This infrastructure we're building, we want to be a scalable infrastructure to operate with research information management and research data management. There's a lot to do, but again, I'll bring it back to IRIS. So I'm going to hand over back to Anne. I think that's me done on my presentation. I think it is. Yes, that's me.
Thanks very much, Malvia. So we'll move on to Ross.
I'm just going to give a quick update before going into some more detailed description about the technical innards of IRIS and a live demo, so just a walk through the reports, etc., that we've made available. We'll start off, Barbie's already covered a number of points here, but they're just reproduced, so they're all in one place. So over the next 2 years, the project team members who are behind PIRIS and IRIS now will continue. MIMIS are the service hosts, and Cranfield University are responsible for the development, so Paul Needham, who unfortunately can't join us, took a lead on that, and Evidence Base look after our user engagement and evaluation. the thing that differentiates Iris from Pyrus is that troublesome P at the front. It did prove that it was technically feasible to combine usage stats with those on the published sites, but there are business drivers associated with publishers making article level statistics available, and so we avoided it and moved to just concentrating on institutional repository usage statistics, but still with that counter standard. So very much it's of the community for the community. The current status, Barbia was quite close with 53, it's actually 54. We had another one go live last week. excuse me. The basic thrust behind Iris is based on a tracker code which essentially pings through to say usage events have taken place, and it's independent of the repository the software. So we have this tracker code idea behind in DSpace repositories, ePrints repositories, and we also produced a functional spec for Fedora, and Oxford University had that working when we did the Pyrus 2 project. We collect downloads, not record views, which is an important distinction, and we process them in that raw data in counter compliant ways. So that includes things like filtering out robots and abnormal use, that kind of thing. We make the stats available to repositories themselves, but also we're then able to produce an aggregate picture. We're not just concentrating on articles, as you'll see, it's all item types, and we have produced a report on the item types that we are finding, because obviously we have to map them back onto a sort of a normalized set of items, and that's the subject of a report that we published. Since we began, the Counter-Pyrus Code of Practice has actually been published, which covers article level statistics, which we're conformed with, but as I say, we're wider, we cover all item types that are in the repositories. And I'll move on. So we've continued with an active program of evaluation, dissemination, etc. Okay, this is on your screen now. I won't be testing people on, but basically that's the data that gets pushed from the tracker code. So whenever a download occurs, a repository essentially sort of pings the Iris UK server with details about that download. And for those of you who aren't familiar with it, each bullet point corresponds to various values that are in an open URL string there. So the thing that says I can point down here, URL ver, is that the NISO standard, there's a timestamp here, there's the IP of the requesting, the client IP rather, then there's the user agents, down here, RFT, ArtNum, that's the identifier of the item. You may spot it's Open Access Initiative, OAI identifier. That's the MIME type, so here it's a PDF. And then the referrer there is the source repository. At the moment we've issued code for DSpace 1.8 and above, and for 3. The code's actually developed by a company called Atmaya, who are part of the collaborative space for DSpace. The ePrint stuff has also been done by our excellent colleagues in Southampton. It's the whole thing behind this draws on experience gained in knowledge exchange workshops and the recommendations that they produced, which in turn drew on the experiences of the Measure project, which some of you may be familiar with at Los Alamos. We have looked at tracker code for other IR software. We started off, as I say, with the Fedora, and Oxford implemented that. We have started to try and prod the pure portals with Altera, but really it's up to the users to prod to have that functionality supported. So I'd recommend that you if you're in a position to, that you make your voice heard. And then other platforms, I could mention that we've worked with the OAPEN project, who are serving e-books from a software called Arno, the repository, but it's exactly the same mechanism. Okay. And what we do with the data, we just process it. There's a lot of detail about it if you want to look at the documentation on the website, but basically we follow the counter robots exclusion list, but it's very important to remember that's a minimum requirement. So we've added additional filters to remove more agents that we're able to identify, and apply a simple sort of threshold for what you could call overactive IP addresses. So we're suspecting they're not human resources, but it's substantially better, but we're still not satisfied. So we have taken a bit of work forward with a company called Information Power, who looked at all the data that we'd collected back to July 12, and they looked at devising a set of algorithms that would dynamically identify and filter out unusual robot activity. And there's a report available on our website also. But the key findings are that really, you can't necessarily judge suspicious behaviour on the basis of one day's usage, or even a month necessarily, but the longer the time frame you've got, the better chance you have. And at certain levels of activity, machine versus or non-genuine use is practically indistinguishable from genuine human activity. But we're going forward with it. We're testing, experimenting with some new dynamic filtering, and we will engage with the use community. And we'll take forward the work through. There's a counter technical advisory group. There's a subgroup going to be formed to look at the robots as part of the NISO Sushi Standing Committee. And it's also the subject of some work that the Confederation of Open Access Repositories Usage Data Interest Group are also active in to try and get international context to it. And we'll cover some of this in a webinar in the next couple of months, which is specifically on that topic of robot filtering. Now, if I go, I'm going to go in to the live service. I've logged into, this is the live session, it's an administrator account, so there are some additional facilities down here on the left-hand side that a user wouldn't normally see, but the basis of this portal is that it's full disclosure, so any participating institutional repository can see their own statistics in here, but also those of all the other participating repositories. So this is a total figure. So if I go into the repository statistics, and apologies that there'll be a little pause while all your screen displays need to refresh. So this is a list. I won't move down the screen, otherwise your screen will break up again, but you get the picture. The repository is down in the left-hand column, and then when they joined, the total number of items that have been downloaded, that's discrete items, and then the downloads are cumulative figure to the current month, and then per month. And they are substantial figures. So just within the past month, you see there at Cranfield is the order of 19,000. We'll come back to what the pre-robot filtered statistics were later on. But so if you imagine there are a further 40-odd institutional repositories below that. We can show, based on various criteria, differences, so just at a trivial level, the difference between eSpace and dSpace repositories. And then we can also look at the downloads by item type. So this is where we have taken what we've received and mapped it onto an RSUK item type. We don't throw away the original metadata, so we can always restate the data. But you can see here that articles are obviously the very popular, but if you just bear with me, I will just move the screen down slightly, hopefully, should see it refreshing. But again there, you'll see that there's also interest in conference proceedings and theses and dissertations. Okay, so as Bavia said, people are using and downloading the content. Some of the other things that we can provide information on, and we're not policing this in any way, is the presence of DOIs on the material, and in particular article DOIs. So we're able to report back to say, of the material that was downloaded from here, we can find the DOI of a certain percentage of the material. So it's meant in a constructive sense so that we can help institutional repositories, because we would recommend it was stored separately. You can also search on the content. So if I was interested in articles on IRIS itself, you can see here that there are in fact two articles, the same article, but one's in the Huddersfield institutional repository and one's in Cranfield. And so if you add those together, you'd get the amount of usage taken, well, the number of downloads of those particular items from those repositories. The ingest statistics, this is where we account for counter robots, so the raw data in for just about a team here. If you imagine there's 60,376 events counter, they don't possess any, didn't seem to be any the robot activity that's from the counter list. However, we would remove a further 15,000 from that figure, as we recognise those as being robots. We account for double clicks in the same way as counter does, so you're left with a net figure over on the right hand side. Interesting that there are some others where the counter versus IRIS UK robots are the other way around, so counters removing an awful lot. In the case of Bournemouth, yes, sorry, that's what I was looking for. So in the case there were, of the 4.7 million, 3.9 are from counter robots, and there's a further. So it's a drastic reduction. Then we produce item reports, similar to people are familiar with counter, then the journal reports one, these are item report one. I'll just do it across 2 months at Cranfield. Okay, if I just move down, so bear with the screen judder, that's the output. So in these particular months there were downloads, and this is sorted in reverse order, so these are the highest total across the 2 months, but you can see the individual month's activities, and you can see there are a mixture of articles, reports, theses, etc. If you look at this is the electronic theses and dissertation reports. We have in here the White Rose consortium reports. So if I repositories rather. So if I run a report on those, we can see here the number of downloads, which is a significant figure. So that well into the thousands for some reports are coming from here. And then, as I said before, because we're, by virtue of us being in the middle, we can actually run a consolidated article report across all repositories. I won't kick that off now because it does take some considerable time. Okay, I'll move back to the slideshow now. Via the whiteboard, because I think I've just got a couple of things to say before I stop. The types of materials available we will take forward. So the material obviously is available via the portal. You may have seen that you can download some of it via some of the reports in PDF formats. That was a user requested it because they found it useful in that format. And we'll be adding new views and reports as we go, pushing more down into the individual repository statistics, because institutional repositories have asked us to do that. We will be incorporating more metadata, and Balbia referred to it, so the funder grant information as required or requested under the REOCS guidelines. When that's available, we can report it. We have a SUSHI server available, so the statistics that are held within IRIS can be gathered via SUSHI, and there are increasingly stringent requirements in Release 4. It was basically sort of an optional report before, but now the production quality of the SUSHI server is part of the counter audit process. And we'll expand the APIs and web services, which may be of use to some of you in the institutional repositories, and we're going forward with some community-led suggestions for enhancements, but there is an API there, so if people would like to make use of it, then we can describe it to them. Okay, so I'll now hand over back to Anne.
Yeah, thanks very much, Ross. So if anybody's got any questions specifically for Ross on either part of his presentation, please can you type them in the chat box now. While you're doing that, Ross mentioned about the report we've done on item types. We are revisiting the item type mapping. We're now a year down the line. So we're looking at how well it's worked, whether there's any new guidelines that have come out on the use of item types in institutional repositories. So we will be asking for your feedback on that sometime soon. Question from Emma. I think that one is specifically a question for Paul. So if that's okay, we'll make a note of that. We'll check with Paul what the position is, and we'll get back to you afterwards. Apologies that Paul's not here and we can't answer it at the time. Okay, apart from that, we don't appear to have any questions at the moment. So I'm going to hand over to Joe for the last part of the webinar, but you will have a chance to ask questions at the end. So if anything does come to mind, feel free to ask it.
Okay, so I'm going to be speaking a little bit about the community engagement and evaluation side of things. As Ross has said, Irish UK is led by the community very much so, and so we're very involved in ensuring that the service meets the needs of the community and finding out what people want. And so Ross has mentioned, for example, that a feature was added around PDF downloads, and so it's a constant review and process. So I'm just going to give a little overview of some of the things we do to support that. We have a growing number of repositories, as we've mentioned. We currently have 54 repositories in Irish UK. And with those repositories and other people who are interested in the developments, we have a number of different communication channels that we use. So we have an Irish UK mailing list that we use for sort of announcements and updates. We have an Irish News Twitter account that we use to communicate with those who are using social media. We have a newsletter, which we periodically develop and send out to participants and others who are interested, and we also have copies of that on the website. We have webinars such as the one that you're attending at the moment and others around the more technical aspects of Irish UK, and again we share those via the website. And we also have a lot of presentations, other events and demonstrations. Ross, for example, this week will be at the DigiFest event. And so we also are gathering feedback from participating repositories via online surveys, conversations that might be face-to-face or online or on social media, to try and find out how people are using the information within Irish UK and how we can support that. We've also very recently established a community advisory group, so we have a group of people who are willing to provide feedback on a more regular basis, and we'll be able to use that to inform future developments and test items and help us prioritise developments within Irish UK. So I wanted to mention a little bit about the user surveys, because those of you who are current members, so participating repositories, you may well have been invited to complete our annual user survey, which is open at the moment. It's open until the end of March, and at the time of writing the presentation, we've had 29 responses. So I wanted to give a little bit of an overview about the feedback that we've had so far. We also invite all new joiners a survey where we get their sort of initial impressions, ideas, feedback. If there's anything where they're not sure how it works, they would like guidance and support, we also ask for that feedback. And the annual survey that's available at the moment collects data on how people are using repository statistics, the value of Irish UK, any challenges or barriers that they experience and how we might be able to overcome those, the benchmarking capabilities and what people would like in that area or what they're currently doing, the usability of Irish UK, and any support or guidance materials that we could develop to help people. So again, these figures are likely to change as the some more responses come into the survey, but this is just to give you an idea of the sort of feedback that we're getting at the moment. So 68% of the respondents to the current survey have reported that Irish UK has improved their statistical reporting, and 65% have reported that it saves time collecting statistics. So it might be that people are collecting them in a number of different ways. Irish UK enables them to do that more quickly, more efficiently, and for some it's enabled them to do additional reporting. So 65% have reported that Irish UK enables them to report on things that previously they didn't have the information to do so. We also had 83% who mentioned that Irish UK either is currently being used by them for benchmarking or that they hope to use it in future for benchmarking purposes. And as we have seen from the demonstration, you can see how all of the participating repositories are in the data together, and so people can use that for benchmarking purposes. Everyone who's participating has agreed to that open data protocol, and that's the way that Irish UK, the ethos that Irish UK has. We've asked people about the best feature about Irish UK, and this was an open response, but the responses tended to be categorised around three different areas. The first area was around the statistics themselves, the fact that they're reliable, authoritative, they're counter-compliant, the fact that robots are filtered out, and as Ross has mentioned and Anna's mentioned as well, we spent quite a lot of time and energy in making sure that we are getting the results as accurate as we can do. And so it's nice to see that that's one of the best features of Irish UK. We also have some people who specifically mentioned the value of having the IR1 report so that they can make that reporting to Scotland much easier. And also some people who were saying it was really useful to repurpose the materials for different audiences. Perhaps they're reporting to academic schools or they're reporting to senior management. And so the data within Irish UK can be repurposed for lots of different audiences. The second sort of theme around the best feature was around the benchmarking, and so this is seen as a real plus point of Irish UK. Mainly the comments around that were to do with the fact that people can compare the download statistics across participating institutional repositories, and also the fact that there is the number of participating institutions is growing, and there's quite a broad range across the sector of different types of institutions in there as well. The final area that people mentioned as the best feature is that it's really easy to use, which is obviously a very positive form of feedback to get. We had a number of people who commented on how easy it is to set up, and also the fact that it's a very user-friendly way to get the statistics. And we asked specifically some questions around the user interface and the functionality, and 96% of respondents said that they were both very clear to understand. So hopefully if you are new to Irish UK, you'll be able to get straight in there and see how it's used. But of course, we're interested in getting your feedback all the time on how we can support that. We asked people what their most useful reports were, and this is a ranking of, we asked them to rate all of the different reports. These were the top five that I wanted to highlight. So the first one, unsurprisingly, is the repository statistics, and that's the main table that we saw with all the different repositories listed and their statistics. The second one was the item report one, which is the scholar reporting report. The third one was the electronic thesis and dissertation report. The fourth most useful feature was searching. So this is, we imagine, is being used to search either for particular authors or particular items, and you want to sort of track the usage of those items across there. And the fifth thing that people said were most useful was the DLI statistics as well. So those are the most commonly used features within Irish UK. I wanted to just highlight a couple of general comments to kind of close this section. So we have some quotes from people who said, we were very impressed by the support we received during implementation and the responsiveness of the team following inquiries. We're very keen to be able to demonstrate the reliable, authoritative, standards-based stats and start publicising Irish UK internally. And building on from that, there was another respondent who said that to date IRIS has been very useful and we are aiming to make better use of the service. And I think we're really experiencing at the moment this sort of transition for people really starting to embed use of Irish UK within their reporting mechanisms. And we're hoping to be able to develop some use cases and case studies around how to do that information and how people are currently doing that and how you might go about doing that yourself. If you're on the webinar at the moment and you're not a member of Irish UK and you are interested and you are a UK repository, then please do contact us at iris@mimus.ac.uk. All the details are on the website and they'll be at the end of the webinar as well. Once you contact us, there'll be a few sort of questions that we'll need to know about the type of repository that you have, the version that you're running, and then you'll be able to get some advice from us on what would be involved. It's normally a very easy process, but Paul Medium, who unfortunately is unavailable on the webinar today, we'll be able to advise you on the technical requirements and actually get the system implemented. And we have some support from people there who've been saying the setup was very quick and painless, which is always a delight. So that's a very positive feedback on that. So I think that's the end of my section. If you have any questions, either for myself or others, then please do add them to the chat window. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Jo. So now it's over to you for your questions and answers, either specific questions about Jo's presentation or questions generally about anything we talked about or anything to do with the Irish UK service. We've actually got one to start us off with. Sarah's saying the statistics in IRIS are impressive. Have you considered making the data visible to all, or maybe the top line figures? I think that's the question for you, Ross.
Yes, we have. I mean, we'd like to be completely open with all the data that's in there. It's just that we've just limited it at the moment to the people who are participating, but there's nothing to stop certain, you know, repositories themselves making their statistics available. There are things that could be published as an aggregated count, but it'd be nice to get more comprehensive cover so that we had even more IRs in there. But I would agree with you that they it does undermine anybody who says that, oh well, you can forget about intrusion reports because nobody uses the stuff that's in there. It's categorically not the case. So it's really surprising to see the level of use and downloads. So that they presume they must be valued, otherwise people wouldn't go on downloading them. But no, we're not really in a position to be able to make it openly available. But the site itself, any member of the UK Access Management Federation can log in. So it's a considerable population who can access it, but we are sort of sensitive to the fact that some people may not want their statistics published. In fact, there is one institution who have given that reason for not joining, because they would be uncomfortable to start off with.
Thanks, Ross. I don't know, Balvia, whether you want to add anything to that or whether Ross has covered it.
No, I think Ross has covered it. I think I don't know whether Sarah was thinking about sort of on the splash page of IRIS to show kind of aggregate figures, that type of functionality, kind of like what the figure so far. But obviously, Ross has said that we haven't got all repositories in there yet, and that might be something we could do later.
Yeah, thanks, Balvia. We've then got an interesting question from Meg, which says that Exeter had a rather spectacular jump in downloads between October and November last year. She's asking if we've got any explanation as to what might have happened, because they thought it was robots, but as we've said, we are filtering those out. Again, that's very much a question for Paul Needham. So I've made a note of it. I'll send him an email afterwards, and as soon as he's better, he'll get back to you, and hopefully we can do some digging and find out what on earth is going on there.
And I can just add that we are conscious that there are peaks, and one of the things that we're going to be doing is moving from just a daily processing where we log the stuff and do the counts to a monthly re-examination of the material, so to give us that timeline so that we can hopefully recognise unusual behaviour, peaks in demand, have some kind of chance to explore and determine whether it's the result of legitimate activity or it's dubious in some way. But all of those are sort of value judgments. So certainly in this case, Paul will have no problem in going through your stats.
And then we've got a question from Chris, who can see quite a lot of data when she logs in, although Nottingham isn't yet registered. And she's asking, is this because of Sherpa, or can everybody see the data? we've already talked a bit about the open policy, and basically all the data in IRIS is open to anybody who's got a Shibboleth login. So anybody from a UK academic institution can log in and see the data. I don't know, Ross, do you want to add any?
We'd love to put Nottingham's data in, but you're quite right that's the entry condition, that you're just a member of the UK Access Management Federation. And this is an institution, obviously, it doesn't go to the commercial people who are registered. But if you're in ac.uk, you can see the data.
Thanks, Ross. If you've got a question that we haven't had time to answer, or if anything occurs to you afterwards, please email our help desk, iris@mimus.ac.uk. We love to hear from you. We're happy to talk to you either via email, by phone, at any events or whatever. As I said, the recording of the webinar will be made available on the IRIS website shortly, as will the presentation. We'd value your feedback on the webinar and would be grateful if you could complete a short questionnaire. The URL for the questionnaire will be emailed to you shortly. Please remember to log out by clicking on File and then on Exit. Thank you very much for joining us. Keep your eye on the IRIS mailing list for more webinars coming up, particularly the one on robots. If you've got any suggestions for topics for webinars, let us know that as well. And once again, thank you very much to all our presenters, and goodbye for now.